Hello, everybody. I'm Michael Monaco.
And I'm Bobby Salvis, and we are the Hazmat Guys, bringing you knowledge and insight to make your job a little bit easier and safer.
Let's get to the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Hazmat Guys. I'm Bobby, and I'm here with Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hey, what's going on?
Oh, nothing. But we did get the chance to catch up with a couple of our very good friends that we are lucky enough to have in-house right now. Not literally in front of us. It's still social distance time, but we have our friends from a couple of guys from FLIR. Say hi, guys.
Hey, guys.
Hey, how you doing?
So we'll start with Steve. Steve, give us the Reader's Digest about you and what you do.
I'm Steve Timoshuk. I'm product manager of all things radiation at FLIR. If it's got anything to do with any of the RIDs, PRDs, SPRDs, or whatever, I'm the person. Been in the field for, it's coming up on 16 years now.
And Chris?
Yeah, Chris Kraki. I'm a regional sales manager for the detection side of FLIR. So that's all the CAMBIO, RadNuke, explosives, narcotics detection sensors. I've been with FLIR for about 14 years now.
Oof, that's a long time.
That is a long time.
Started when I was 12, so...
Wow! Got them early. Good for them.
Oh, so we're chatting a little about RIDs today, yes?
RIDs,
yes, RIDs, the phenomenal RIDs. I thoroughly enjoy using. I feel like RIDs are like magic. Like it's this just weird little box that like magically tells me what's in front of me, and we actually end up using these quite a bit out in the field. Anytime we have radiation, we're always reaching back to our RIDs, even if we know it's just kind of a nothing thing, we're looking to confirm it. But they do have some special qualities to them that is a little above and beyond, like, say, a Ludlum or a Geiger counter, right? Because they only pick up the gamma and the neutron radiation. But there's also the alpha and beta aspect and component to radiation that we often come across when we're responding. And alpha and beta... typically, we're using something like a survey meter, right? That would be generally what I would refer to as our Ludlum, even though Ludlum is just a manufacturer, to find that alpha and beta emitter. And if we just do some real quick background on that, your alpha particles are your big, fat, clunky particles that come shooting out, and they get easily shielded by something like a piece of paper, versus something like beta, which can be blocked by tinfoil. The reason that a lot of these, the alpha, the beta, the gamma, they're the more common ones that we come across. But when it comes to the RIDs, they're actually looking at the gamma, right?
Right. It's like the gamma neutron radiation, which has significantly more range. And therefore, you need to know about it a lot further away because though alpha and beta are bad, if you get them inside you, the neutron gamma kind of combination is something that exposure concerns are, you know, or a concern of security, we'll say. So we need better technology in order to catch those things from a greater distance.
Right. Because think about it, right? If we were trying to search off something based upon alpha and beta, we would be right up next to it before we even knew what was going on. So we couldn't even search for the thing unless we were specifically looking for gamma and neutron, which go far, far distances.
Right, right. So the question is, like, when do we use these things? The RIDs are a kind of a key piece in, like, let's say, secondary screening missions, right? Like, after a hit, right, on a detect only, like those hot and cold type things. Yes, I have. No, I do not have. Well, this is going to go in and maybe you can either identify the actual isotope or can give us a little bit more in depth where even those dastardly things where they hide it behind something that's kind of like innocuous, right?
Right.
So we can have naturally occurring medical, industrial, and these types of meters are kind of specialized in that.
And they give a certain level of comfort, right? Especially to an incident commander who can turn around and say, okay, well, that's radiation. All right, great. That's tectanium. Phenomenal. I don't know anything about it. Oh, that's medical isotope. Okay. All right. So this is kind of like supposed to be here. This isn't anything that's crazy. These meters are what we generally would consider to be medium resolution instruments. All right. Yeah. And that really kind of, that term resolution, they're talking about the instrument's abilities to distinguish peaks within the spectrum. If you think about, you know, gamma is kind of similar to light. There's different frequencies or different energies produce different spikes when we graph it all out. And that's kind of how these RIDs start to function. They're small, they're battery operated. They can identify sources of gamma radiation in high percentages of instances. And I have to say, like, I haven't really come across anything yet where I wasn't able to identify with the isotope identifier, even if it was shielded, even if it was, you know, anything along those lines.
It is. And you know what? Now that Bob and Mike have just vomited all this wording at you, we're going to bring those two guys that said hi to the beginning back into the and ask them, like, that's a very short and sweet of radiation, right? Of how and why we use metering. But now FLIR has been in this business, in the radiation business, for a long time. Like, and you guys arguably put out the, I'm going to say, the most robust, you know, radiation meters that are out there. Give us a little bit of background history on, like, FLIR and the RIDs. Probably Chris, what do you think about that?
Yeah, sure. And so, you know, we sometimes kind of talking about the technology, generally speaking, we almost refer to our RIDs as a physicist in a box, is how sometimes we'll use it to describe it in terms of that magic that Mike was talking about. So we produce, support, and train customers on the Identifier line of RIDs. These are the most common RIDs in the world. We've got thousands upon thousands that have been fielded out there. We do this out of Oak Ridge, Tennessee. So these are produced in the U.S. We have our trainers out of Oak Ridge, Tennessee as well. Those operations in Oak Ridge date back 17 years, and we've been fielding these instruments to hazmat teams, bomb squads, CSTs, federal agencies, foreign friendly governments, et cetera, for almost close to two decades now.
You know, let me jump in here too and just point out that, you know, one of the cool things is every so often we get sent or see a news article where there's a picture of an identifier being used out there in the field as part of a mission, you know, locating or identifying radioactive material that's, let's just say, shouldn't be there, it's out of regulatory control, and basically the situation is basically get control of it before it gets to someone or somewhere it shouldn't go. Be it the 425 or really any of the other identifiers in the product line, our equipment basically falls in line with kind of FLIR's core value of saving lives and livelihoods.
Wow.
So in 2019, you guys did something with the Department of Homeland Security, right? The SAVER assessment of the RIDs. Chris, what was that about?
Yeah, we did. We did. So there are these SAVER assessments. I think there'll probably be a decent degree of familiarity with some of these assessments. They are Department of Homeland Security funded. So it's not like a FLIR report. What Homeland Security does is they find responders with relevant experience to evaluate the category of instrumentation at hand. And so this was people with experience, hazmat, bomb squads, civil support teams, et cetera. They then do a market survey of available instrumentation. The Identifier R400 was one of the RIDs which was assessed. And then they kind of compare relevant categories such as affordability, capability, usability, and then kind of rank the various systems that are part of that assessment. And then they put out a report. And so there's a report on RIDs that came out in February 2019, and the Identifier R400 wound up coming out on top of that assessment. And that assessment is available on the Department of Homeland Security SAVER report website.
That's pretty cool, actually. That's awesome. So, all right, going back, we'll go back in the time machine. Right. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I might have missed a couple of models, but you guys had the Identifinder. And then came the Identifinder 2, right?
That's right.
And then you had the underwater one. Does anybody even... Were we the only ones that bought that?
there are some other underwaters out there.
Wow.
Anybody who was operating either underwater and up to another atmosphere of pressure down to, you know, 33 feet was a spec on that, or even customers who were interested in having an instrument which they could fully decontaminate by dunking it and scrubbing it. That's where the underwater casing was definitely of interest, but very distinguished in that it's got the yellow casing around it.
Yellow, so
you can't miss it. Yeah.
So we had the Identifinder, then we had the Identifinder 2, we had the underwater modification of that, and then we had the R400, which honestly is a really good meter. But now we have this new R425, right? So Steve, why don't you tell us what is improving on each one of these things? What's happening?
Oh, there's a lot to talk about here. I'm going to start out with the gamma detector. Basically, it's a cube detector, so all faces of the detector are the same size, so there's sensitivity all around is equal. So you could, any way you stack or sit the instrument, you have the same response from it.
Oh, so you don't have to point it anymore.
Correct. Wow. It also uses solid-state silicon PMs instead of traditional PMTs. And why is that important? Well, it's stable across temperature. It's a heck of a lot more durable, which also makes it rugged.
What's a PMT?
Photo multiplier tube basically takes the electric light pulses and turns it into electric pulses.
Oh, okay.
Which the electronics read and, you know.
Just to expand on that, because I think that's a theory that's lost on some people about how the actual meters work. When the radiation hits something, it produces a flash of light. Yes. Am I correct on that?
That is correct.
And so this thing is be able to see it on all six sides of it, getting better sensitivity.
It'll be equal on all sides. So, you know, if you hold it straight up to an object or to the, you know, hold the instrument sideways to the object, sensitivity and readings will be the same.
So no more blue dot.
Correct.
That's good. I think you should still put it on there as a head fake.
Well, I'll put it this way. A lot of people still want it.
Do they really? Oh, my God. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. It's still out there, and yeah, I don't know if it's a warm fuzzy or what, but you know, it's still there. But like I said, at least from a gamma standpoint, there's really no need to, per se, because it doesn't matter which side it's looking at.
Right. And these things are, I mean, I know they're rugged, and everybody knows what they're talking about with rugged, but I mean, these things are like hammers. You can nail some things in. I'm not saying you could do it. I'm just saying.
Well, I don't know if I don't know. I'd go as far as nail, you know, building a house with it, but, you know, yeah, it is pretty rugged. It'll meet the 1 meter drop test. It's IP67, which means it's dust proof and can be submerged, you know, a meter underwater for 30 minutes, which I think Chris alluded to a little earlier. Basically, you dunk it in and you can decon it pretty easily.
Wow. That's awesome.
So then what are the things that haven't changed, right? Like if I already have the Identifinder 2 or the other underwater one and you put this in my hands, is there what's going to be familiar, what's not going to be familiar, what things am I going to need to relearn altogether?
Definitely. So by design, we kept the interface quite similar to the point where all of our users of the Identifinder 2, aka the Identifinder R400, all these departments that have made quite a bit of investment in training their people on how to use that generation of the RID are able to effectively pick up the Identifinder R425, and it's going to be very familiar to them off the bat. So we're talking about a very short learning curve to then get up to speed with the 425. We maintain some of the features such as the web interface and again that three button interface across the top is going to be very familiar. You've got your finder mode, dose rate mode, then identify core modes remain the same.
And the two wasn't overly difficult to use in any way, shape, or form. I mean, if you knew what a power button looked like, it kind of told you when to identify and how close to get and really what to do. So all that stuff is the same.
That's right. The physicist is still right there in the box doing his thing as long as you're queuing him up. I would say that the biggest single training item in addition, based on the improvement to communications that we have with the 425, which is primarily the Bluetooth, has to do with the app.
Okay. Oh, hold on a second, because I don't know where this would fit, because I probably should have brought this up in the previous part when we were talking to Steve about all the parts of it, but communications, we'll talk about reach back. Is this an improvement? Because I mean, back in the day, reach back sucked. Like everything, it was terrible.
We had a binder, a 30-page picture step-by-step binder to get people to do reach back.
Yeah. So does this thing kind of integrate with the app to make it easier? Like, because reach back is I don't think there's many people that are listening to the show that are the guys that would be like, oh yeah, this is this. They have to send it back to even me and Mike. I'm sending it to reach back. Is this kind of addressing it in a new way?
Basically the nuclear smart guys back at reach back are able to get the files on there using the app. The system uses a Bluetooth connection to a mobile phone to wirelessly transmit files back, or more importantly, even remotely monitor it if you want to keep a low profile, say put it in a backpack or just stick it somewhere and watch what's going on around you.
That's awesome.
So basically you can take your spectrum and send it back and get your answer, you know, at what to do next.
So you can drop the unit close to it and then back yourself up and use the phone to actually monitor remotely and do the reach back right from your phone.
Oh,
that is correct. Yeah.
So we just got another use for the Proby. I'm not going to lie.
Wow. That is awesome.
Time distance shielding Proby.
No, I'm kind of run over with that thing. As stupid and simple as that is, using your phone. Now, how far does the Bluetooth work?
Yeah, basically your typical Bluetooth 4, and I'm drawing a blank at the distance at the moment, but pretty much like your earpiece, you know.
I heard it's like 30 feet.
I believe that is correct, yes. Thank you.
You know, yeah, I think it's like 30 feet, which you think about that. If every time you double your distance, you're quartering your exposure, so that is significant distance.
It's basically all about keeping people safe.
Hmm. Wow.
So what are we looking at for price tag wise? What do one of these units run?
What's sure. $1 million price?
It is, yeah, we could certainly, it is not anywhere close to that, but we are going to tease it a bit and say departments who are interested in getting a price quote, they can contact us through our website or through one of our authorized distributors and get that price quote. You know, kind of going back to those Saber assessments, they do mention affordability. The R400 did quite well in terms of its assessment on affordability. And we are, I can say that we are even better there with the R425. So the way to contact us for that quote, FLIR.com/R425. And there's a form to fill out.
All right. I have one more question. I'm going to direct this to Steve, if I may. I get this thing out of the box, right? I'm assuming the battery still goes in the handle as the previous versions have gone, right? What's the boot time? What is, kind of take me through it. Like, how does this thing get up and get going? Is it generally the same, or is it like a higher definition screen?
I guess let me jump in on that one. Yeah, you pretty much take it out of the box and hold it. There's a number of power options to this the 425. The engineering team in Oak Ridge did a great job with this. There's a internal rechargeable lithium ion battery that'll run it about 12 hours or so. But there's also the option of a user replaceable hot swappable batteries where you can use commercial off the shelf batteries such as, we include a 16650 that's rechargeable, as well as two disposable CR125s that can be put in.
The CR125, are they like watch batteries?
The little camera batteries.
Yes.
For like, are you serious?
Weapon sights optics.
Oh, yeah. My God.
So basically, like I said, you know, there's plenty of options, and this thing will keep you going. And I guess, you know, you mentioned display, so let me kind of hit that one a little bit. One thing that's really exciting on this is the display. It's sunlight readable. You can put it in direct sunlight and absolutely see every detail on that screen without squinting or trying to shade it.
Yeah, you cover it with your hand.
Right. And another important thing is you could read it with polarized sunglasses, which, ooh, if you're on the water or what have you, becomes an issue with the users out there with the polarized sunglasses.
Wow. That is awesome.
How many reach backs do you guys think you do per year?
So
I'm not told.
Right. Yeah. That is a user submission to the federal government function, but it is much more easily enabled with the use of the app with the 425.
Yeah. Cause I have to say, like, thinking back to it, there are plenty of times that I probably should have done a reach back. Probably every time you use it, you should end up doing a reach back, but it was too much. It was just too many steps, too much going on. The fact that this is just going to be a lot easier. I hope those physicists are ready.
Well, whoever's submitting, just make sure that you're letting them know if it's a drill, it's a drill.
Oh, yes.
God. That's funny. So, Chris, what else do you have to add about this?
Sure. So we have a webinar coming up on the 425, which is going to be very useful for anyone who wants to know in more detail what are some of the differences between the 425 and the previous generation RIDS. That is, one is going on May 28th at 1 p.m. Eastern. That same website I mentioned, FLIR.com/R425, fill out the form there. We'll send you the registration link. If you are listening after May 28th or you can't make May 28th, we will have some additional webinars afterwards. Contact us. We'll let you know what's up. And also, if there are some agencies out there that are budgeting for RIDS, they're looking at trying to figure out what direction they want to go, and they want to perhaps get a demonstration instrument in, let us know. Contact us. We are doing everything that we can to try and remain flexible for agencies to take a look at new gear in the time of COVID. So please contact us.
That's great.
I was just looking through stuff. The sensor is more sensitive. Does that mean I can be further away, or does that mean it's just going to do a better job of picking up what I have?
Yes and yes. Since it's more sensitive, you'll be able to see it a little further away. And being more sensitive also, it'll react a lot faster than the previous generations. One thing to kind of mention there that would kind of double back, the gamma detector is more than three times as sensitive as the previous generation R400 identifiers that everybody's familiar with. And the neutron detectors, we're using a solid state design. It's better than two times as sensitive as the previous generation.
So can I equate those two to three times like directly to distance, where, okay, I can be twice as far back as I was previously, or is it not really relatable like that?
It depends on energy, so it's not exactly directly relatable, but
okay.
In the standard tests, you know, the head-to-head typical standard tests, that's how it falls. This thing's a little beast.
Yeah, I think there's some specificity to the isotope there, isn't there, Steve?
Absolutely, yeah. The physics and the energies.
And obviously there's, and then you get to shielding, and then you get into different energies of given isotopes, and that can all have specific impacts as well.
Mm. So there's no just kind of, I guess, typical hazmat answer is it depends.
That's correct. Well, it comes down to energies, you know, the energies that the material's putting off.
Yeah, and I typically For most RITs and many instruments, they will whenever it comes to trying to compare resolution and sensitivity to gamma counts, typically it's going to be the 662 keb peak for cesium-137, which will be used as a somewhat basis of comparison across the board.
Chris, Steve, thank you so much for coming on for a little bit and talking radiation and kind of giving us an update on what we're looking to see in the future when it comes to the newest and latest in technology.
Yeah, thanks very much for having us. Really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you as well. This is an exciting little product, so hopefully everybody will get a look at it.
Yeah, I got to say, I've loved the, I guess, what you're calling the R400. I've always called the Identifinder 2. I love both of them. So if you're making a better one, that's even more gooder.
It is absolutely more gooder, without a doubt.
I think we're going to use that in the marketing literature.
Thanks, guys.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the Hazmat Guys.
You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel at The Hazmat Guys, and take a moment to call our comment hotline at 843-628-1484.
And we are always looking forward to your feedback about information or interesting incidents that you are a part of, so send us a note at feedback@thehazmatguys.com.
Remember, guys, don't just get on the job, get into the job.